The Western Front. Written and read by Richard Holmes. I'm haunted by the Western Front. Yet the family connection is thin. My father was a boy during the First World War, which transformed jolly uncles into entries in lengthening casualty lists. And if my family was touched by the war, it was bruised far less than many. A headstone in Cambrai commemorates a decorated infantry corporal. His family proudly added the inscription that he was one of five brothers that fell, every one a hero. And in Flatiron Copse Cemetery, in the shadow of Mamet Wood on the Somme, lie three pairs of brothers. I first visited the Western Front in my early 20s. I remember standing under the Menin Gate at Ypres, with its almost 55,000 names of soldiers missing in the Ypres salient before the 16th of August 1917. As I stood there, buglers sounded the last post, and among the audience were many veterans, mostly white-haired and spry, with medals shining on their chests. The war had ended just 51 years before. I was closer in time to it then than I am now to the Normandy landings of 1944. Veterans were neither hard to find, nor reticent when you found them. One stocky Welshman, with a South Wales borderer's badge on his blazer, pulled me up sharply when I started talking about something airily academic, like the dissemination of information within the unit. He was a platoon sergeant. The officer read the map. He ensured that the boys followed in good order. "Dissemination of bloody information," the veteran mimicked in an English accent. Then his memories were back to the front, and his lilt was back to the valleys. "Lousy as rooks we was," he said. "Lousy as bloody rooks." Europe slid almost effortlessly into war in 1914. Although historians argue over whether the First World War was inevitable, a combination of factors, economic and colonial rivalry, French resentment at the loss of her eastern provinces to Germany following the Franco-Prussian War of 1870-71, and a dangerously unstable system of alliances, certainly created a volatile mix, all too easily ignited. There's a similarly inconclusive debate over the degree of individual and national responsibility for the outbreak of war. It's safest to say that while there were warmongers on both sides, they were outnumbered by politicians and military leaders wrestling with problems quite beyond their resources. The events of July and August 1914 smacked more of calamity than conspiracy. The spark that blew the old world apart came on the 28th of June, when Gavrilo Princip, a Bosnian Serb, shot the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, heir to the throne of Austria-Hungary, in Sarajevo, capital of the then recently annexed Austrian province of Bosnia-Herzegovina. Austria, confident of German support, sought to punish the Serbs, and when Serbia rejected an ultimatum designed to be unacceptable, duly declared war on her. The Serbs had appealed to their Slavic brothers in Russia, who began a partial mobilisation to deter the Austrians. Germany warned that she would answer a full Russian mobilisation with one of her own. The Russians, undeterred, ordered full mobilisation the following day. Germany declared war on the 1st of August. France, Russia's ally, was asked to provide a guarantee of neutrality in a Russo-German war, and declined to do so. Germany accordingly declared war on her on the 3rd of August. Britain hesitated briefly, but when Germany invaded Belgium, whose neutrality was guaranteed by a treaty to which Britain was signatory, Britain declared war on Germany on the 4th of August. Between the outbreak of war in August 1914 and the end of the First Battle of Ypres the following November, the Western Front was created. Its ingredients were twofold, physical and psychological. The physical component...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?